Hello and welcome. I'm Ben Schultz.
I'm Nora Schultz.
And you're listening to Trying to Adapt, and today we're trying to adapt to A Christmas Carol, the 1969 animated version.
You guys will not believe which Christmas Carol this one starts with. It's God Rest You Merry Gentlemen.
But the only part that we get to hear of the song is just the part starting with It's just that part.
Which, like, while a good part, I feel like that's the least recognizable part of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. Like, even being a God Rest You Merry Gentlemen stan, when I heard that, I was like, wait a second, which one is that from? Which carol is that from? Yeah, that's the ending of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen.
This version, I think, was originally Dutch, and it was dubbed into English, so there's some weirdness surrounding that.
Overall, the animation is just a little off. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to hear that this came from, like, just a very slightly alternate universe. Where, like, people move like this. I dig it, but it's off.
Just to go ahead and get into the plot, Scrooge is walking on his way to work, and he sees Jacob Marley's grave. This gives him a flashback of the time that he was at Jacob Marley's funeral, and he was, like, the only one there. And the Undertaker asked him if he wanted to give a eulogy or anything. And he gets, like, weirdly pissy about this.
Oh, this one seems to be, like, directly, like, no homoing.
Well, it was a cheap enough funeral, I'll allow, Mr. Scrooge. And rightly so. Of what use is finery to Jacob Marley now?
But he was your partner and friend.
Was, sir. Was.
Like, this one doesn't even want to let Scrooge have one friend in the world, which I thought was a little bit overkill.
It almost seems like he's angry with Marley because he died.
Yeah, you know, exactly. He's like, oh, he was your partner. Well, he's not anymore. Like, damn, dude. I want to point out, before we go any further, that the Scrooge in this version sometimes looks like an old man, but sometimes he just looks like a young man, but with, like, a large, a chin that reminds me maybe a little of Jay Leno, maybe a little of that guy Hacker from Cyber Chase. So if you mix those two images in your head, you got Scrooge.
Now, this is going to be a continuing thing, I think. What a lot of adapters fail to realize is that Scrooge doesn't just say "bah humbug" like a nonsense catchphrase. He's specifically saying it in response to the concept of Christmas and the ghost of Jacob Marley, both of which he assumes to be frauds. That's what the word humbug means. It means fraud.
So, he's saying, bah, fraud.
If you are making an adaptation of A Christmas Carol, and you have Scrooge just walking around saying, bah, humbug, for no reason, you're having him call whatever he's talking to or in front of, he's calling it a fraud. And I don't think
he uses that word lightly.
He doesn't. Not in the original book. In this version, he just says it to the turkey seller.
Is it big enough for a family of nine?
This turkey man would feed good King George's entire colt.
Humbug.
Is he calling the turkey seller a fraud? Is there something dishonest about this guy's business practices that we should know about?
Another thing I think a lot of adapters fail to realize about Scrooge is that, yes, he's a mean old man, but, like, more than just being mean, like, he's grumpy. He avoids social interaction. I feel like a lot of adaptations of Scrooge, like, going out of his way to, like, say something mean to people, which, like, I think in the original book the concept of Scrooge is mostly that he's just a loner, you know?
He just wants to be left alone.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he says mean things pretty much exclusively to get people to go away from him. He's not trying to pick fights with people. He's not, like, he would never start a conversation with somebody, I think is the point I'm trying to get at. Unless it had some kind of business plan in it for him.
Now, here's another detail about Scrooge from this adaptation that kind of recurs throughout the program, is Scrooge trying to sneeze and not being able to. And it starts pretty much right away when Scrooge's nephew Fred comes in.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle!
Huh? Huh? Bah, humbug!
Yeah, I think what was going on there, at least originally, it seemed like he was, like, snuffing tobacco. That's what I thought.
I didn't pick up on that at all.
I thought it was snuff. I thought he even mentioned snuff by name. Maybe he didn't. But yeah, there are several, like, weird moments where he starts to sneeze, like, very loudly, and whoever he's talking to, like, it cuts to them with, like, horrified faces, and then it cuts back, and then he, like, doesn't. Another interesting aspect of this adaptation is that there is exactly one musical number.
This is hilarious. When the musical number happens, and it's when Scrooge's nephew is trying to tell him about how great Christmas is, he starts singing about it.
I have always thought of Christmas time, each year when Christmas comes around, as a kind, forgiving, pleasant.
And then Scrooge
time
responds with a song about how Christmas is actually terrible and you shouldn't care about it.
Now keep in mind, this entire bit is like 30 seconds.
And it costs them plenty for no return when the idiots ever learn that it's just another day in the year and not an excuse for confounded good cheer.
When this happened, I thought to myself, wouldn't it be hilarious if this were the only musical number in the entire thing and the rest of it was played completely straight? And folks, that is exactly what happens.
And keep in mind, it's not just them singing too, like, there is music underneath. They have a backing track. Someone composed music for this. So when I hear this, I think, oh, it's a musical version. Well, that'll be interesting. It's not a musical version.
They might have been trying to make a musical version and then kind of either gave up or had to scale back their budgetary plans.
And it kind of sucks because the little snippet of music that we get seems pretty good. I'd like to hear this Christmas Carol musical in this style, but that's not what we get.
This came out a year before the most famous musical version of the story. I guess we'll probably get to that.
If not this year, then next year.
Or the year after. We're going to do this every December forever.
Once again, they include the part where Bob Cratchit, like, applauds after Fred gives his speech. However, right before he does, they cut to Bob, like, looking very, like, dreamily at Fred. Like, there's definitely a homoerotic thing going on here. And, like, I think that's a new one. We all know, okay, like, Scrooge and Marley were partners. Or Scrooge's young, strapping friend, Dick Wilkins. The budding romance between Bob Cratchit and Fred is a new one, especially considering that they are both in established relationships with women.
That's true.
They're their beards.
We're going to have to make a relationship chart to kind of track the different, like, implied possible pairings between different characters, because we've seen a lot.
I did say that I, like, you know, dug this animation even though it was very low budget. One thing I didn't dig, though, is that all of their hands are, like, as big as their heads. Wasn't really digging that. I also wasn't really digging... The voice acting is also very cheap. That makes sense considering that, according to you, it's a dub. That there are definitely, like, some weirdly paced lines. As well as, like, there are various attempts at British accents. No one really nails it.
I don't know whether this was a mistake or an intentional choice that is inexplicable, but when Scrooge is threatening to fire Bob Cratchit for clapping after his nephew's speech, he calls him Cracket.
Let me hear another hear hear from you, Cratchit.
Might have been a diss. Like Annie calling him Crotchet
in last
in previous
episode. Yeah.
Episode. Yeah. So in this one, like many others, a lot of dialogue is taken right from the book. So, like, unlike last episode, there aren't really, like the themes and, like, for the most part, the story is kept intact here. You know, there's definitely some weird things that we're gonna continue to point out, but I'm just, like, laying that on the table right now that this isn't, like, a very liberal adaptation, you know? This is mostly, like, this is a Christmas Carol.
We find out that people just kind of randomly make fun of Scrooge in taverns and stuff.
They say he's so tight-fisted he can't get his gloves off at night.
Wait, he's like a local celebrity. Which I think is kind of weird because, like, people definitely know who he is in the book. When he dies, they talk about, like, oh, Scrooge finally died. But I think kind of a key part is that, like, he's not important to people. If people hated him so much, they would almost go to his funeral, like, to spit on his grave and stuff.
Scrooge being an asshole needs to not be justified, and if people are constantly making fun of him in public, that seems like a justification.
Oh no, it's like a cycle of violence here. He's not the perpetrator at this point. If he's such a local celebrity, to the point where random people in, like, butcher shops are, like, talking about how awful he is. Like, you would think that, like, his funeral would be attended by people at least being, like, you know, like, celebrating, like, the old bastard's finally dead.
Especially if a lunch is provided.
Even for those who don't eat lunch.
There's a consistent problem in adaptations with introducing Jacob Marley into the story. I'm gonna say it, in the original book, Charles Dickens doesn't pace it out super well. Scrooge gets home, he sees the ghostly face of Jacob Marley on the door knocker, and then it goes away, and he's like, phew. And then later, the ghost of Jacob Marley comes back, and he's like, oh my god, who are you? So this is a problem that goes back all the way to the original book, and most adaptations do not deal with it. This one actually does.
This, I think, actually solves the Jacob Marley problem. I'm going to say it right now. This might be the best Jacob Marley I've ever seen.
Because not only is Jacob Marley not at the door knocker,
he's not recognizable. He does not look... because we even, like... he doesn't look like a person. Jacob Marley here is just this, like... this skull.
Ghastly, like, skeletal figure.
This agonized, haunting eyes. You have to watch this. You don't have to watch this adaptation, but I want to legally require you to watch the Jacob Marley scene if you listen to this podcast. The entire animation budget went on Jacob Marley. He is constantly moving, whether it's his arms in these, like, writhing, agonized patterns, or his, like, ghostly hair is flying, or his mouth is hanging open in pain, and the voice acting.
I was your partner, Jacob Marley. Man of worldly mind. Do you believe in me or not?
I do.
Whoever voice acted Jacob Marley here absolutely sells it. Because a lot of times, people just go for the, like, I am Jacob Marley. No, like, this man is 100% putting himself in the shoes of a ghost that has suffered and will continue to suffer forever.
Oh, it's me. And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness.
But he takes, like, labored, pained breaths in between words. I am completely sold on this Jacob Marley. I would watch 45 minutes of this Jacob Marley.
Unfortunately, we do not get 45 minutes of this Jacob Marley in this adaptation. And in fact, not only are there problems all throughout the show, there are problems even within the Jacob Marley scene, which is the high point of the show. Because Marley, awesome. They nailed it. Scrooge.
But you were a good man of business, Jacob.
They did not nail
it. Oh no, Scrooge is laughable in this scene. Every time they cut to him, I'm disappointed. I just want the camera to focus on Jacob Marley through all of his extremely pained movements.
So, right off the bat, this is a weak Scrooge. Because he doesn't go through the whole, you must be an undigested bit of beef thing.
One of my favorite lines.
He accepts the fact that this is the ghost of Jacob Marley without hesitation, which runs pretty counter to the character of Scrooge in the original book and in most adaptations, and it undermines the meanness and the stubbornness of his character.
Yeah, this adaptation simultaneously wanted to make Scrooge meaner than in the original, but also more of a pussy. Which, like, ends up just kind of feeling like we're watching two different Scrooges. Like, as soon as he gets home in his classic nightgown, we're watching a different Scrooge now.
I just have one other note about Marley specifically. he kind of fades in and out of existence in the middle of talking, and it seems like, on the part of his character, it seems accidental. Like, he can't really control whether Scrooge can see him or not very well.
Marley goes on for, like, 5 minutes about how horrible his situation is, about, like, the incredible torture that he has to, and you believe him here. Sometimes it's just a man in, like, a bit of makeup, and he's got, like, these clearly, like, fake chains, and he's like, don't do what I did. But this Jacob Marley, I 100% believe that he is in more pain than any living being could ever imagine. And Scrooge's response to this is, and I quote,
"You were always a good friend to me. Thank ye."
Thank ye.
There's also a fantastic Scrooge quote where after, you know, Jacob Marley presents the whole three ghosts concept, Scrooge is like, then,
I think I'd rather not.
So apparently he looks at Jacob Marley and he's like, this is fine. I can handle that.
See, this is a problem when you don't have Scrooge be mean enough or stubborn enough. Why does he need the three ghosts? Surely the visitation from Jacob Marley should be enough to shake him and set him on the right path.
I mean, in general, I kind of feel like seeing Jacob Marley like that isn't enough to make you go, like, I really gotta be a better person.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he still needs, like...
But that's the thing, is in order to make that make sense, you need to show that Scrooge is a huge asshole.
And he is a huge asshole in this one, but as soon as he sees Marley, he's just, like, immediately pussified. However, they try to backtrack this with the Ghost of Christmas Past, and I'll get to that in a second. I will say, though, there is kind of a weird scene where they zoom in on, like, the tower of, like, a church, and then it cuts to the inside of his bedroom. I guess Scrooge lives in a church in this one, that's all I have to say.
This is something that I keep coming back to in different adaptations, because I always notice when they screw it up. As with many adaptations, they change the structure of when the ghosts arrive, so that the first one arrives at 1 a.m., the second at 2, the third at 3. But before Marley is even finished,
expect the first one tomorrow, when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Yeah, you're going to.
Not only that, I think it's interesting that in this version he says that before Marley is even done laying out the timetable.
He just assumes it's going to take a long time.
Because it implies that Marley may have originally been planning to have them show up on different nights, and then actually takes that constructive criticism from Scrooge and goes, you know what, actually, I think it would make more sense to have them come on the same night.
I don't like that, though, because I don't like the idea that he's conceding. You know, like, he's letting Scrooge go off easy. In case you were thinking, wow, if Jacob Marley is really as cool as you're imagining, I bet all the ghosts are cool. No.
Nope.
The Ghost of Christmas Past is just an old man in a robe. He doesn't look like a ghost. I will say, though, that, like, they somehow make Scrooge more afraid of the Ghost of Christmas Past than of Jacob Marley. Like, he's just seen this terrifying image, and then the Ghost of Christmas Past comes, and he's like,
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
Like, dude, you just saw, like, the scariest ghost I've ever seen animated, and here this old man comes. You get the idea.
As soon as Past shows up, Scrooge delivers the classic line that I am mortable.
You better not cut that out.
I won't.
I'm mortal, don't forget, and likely to fall.
The Ghost of Christmas Past doesn't guide him
to
the
window.
He's
still in bed at this point.
Or even gesture to it. Why does he say that? He has no reason to be worried that he'll fall, unless he's worried that he'll fall just getting out of bed.
Which, understandable.
If you're going to use the classic lines from the original story, that's fine. They're good. But you have to create a context in which they actually make sense.
I'm begging you.
Please.
I'm begging you nicely. Scrooge is absolutely terrified by the Ghost of Christmas Past for no reason. And then, like, when he takes him to his past, we just skip over his entire childhood. We go right to his apprenticeship. And here is where they decide to, like, show the scene of, like, Scrooge being lonely. But then they ruin it immediately, except because Dick Wilkins is also there.
It's a little weird because they tried to combine Scrooge being lonely in boarding school with Scrooge being a happy, well-adjusted apprentice at Fezziwig's. So we end up being told that this seemingly socially normal individual is actually really lonely. And we don't see that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we see him, like, studying by himself for, like, 10 seconds. And then he turns to his friend Dick Wilkins. Now, I do like Fezziwig in this version because he's a little... He's just a little bit incomprehensible. Like, when he comes up to Scrooge and Dick Wilkins and talks to him about the party.
Let's have the shutters up and get ready to make merry. Billy-ho! Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here. Billy-ho, Dick, cheer up, for these are.
He's clearly been pre-gaming it. Like, he's already slurring his words. Which I think is perfect for the character of Fezziwig. The scene with his party is just, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, off. Like, this is where the cheap animation really shows. A cool thing about Fezziwig's party, though, is we hear Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Past talking, and then we see these, like, semi-transparent, like, purple kind of outlines to represent them. And I thought this was super cool until they cut to the other side and then it's just them talking.
Now, I'm not going to blame this particular adaptation for this because it's a problem that I think every version of the story runs into, is that Scrooge is very happy to see himself as a younger, happier man. But then the moment that any of the ghosts point out some kind of parallel, he immediately, like, goes back on whatever it is he was talking about.
Well, this adaptation is especially egregious with, like, Scrooge's character changes, because within this one, like, 2 minute interval, he goes from absolutely, like, shit terrified of the Ghost of Christmas Past to, like, this is where I was a boy, to, like, getting mad at the Ghost of Christmas Past and being an asshole again.
And then here's something which we have not seen in any other adaptations so far. Scrooge, while he's hanging out with Past, actually, like, starts to feel cold, which I don't think was supposed to be possible, because he's not really there. And then they just go back to Scrooge's room, and Past doesn't go away immediately. They just kind of sit there and talk about, like, what did we learn?
Wait, I think you skipped over the part where Scrooge watches, like, the scene with him and his fiance. This is new. Normally, Scrooge is so, like, horrified by the scene with his fiance that because, like, he feels clearly immense guilt at what he's done because he's not an irredeemable guy. But here, instead, he listens to his fiance say these things to him again, and his response is to turn to the Ghost of Christmas Past and be like,
"She'd had more sense and stayed with me, she'd be well off now."
Which shows that he has learned literally nothing. I mean, I think every adaptation kind of takes their own interpretation with, like, how long it takes Scrooge to, like, have a change of heart. But this, I don't think we've seen one yet where he's still, like, this much of an asshole after watching the scenes of his past.
The Ghost of Christmas Present comes in.
Were you about to talk about the moment where the Ghost of Christmas Present comes in?
Yeah. Do you want to do that?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Because I know I already shared my intense passion with about the Jacob Marley scene, but the animation gets it right at one other point. And I'm even going to say the timestamp, so you don't have to watch this. But I'm begging you to watch this, like, 5 second clip. You gotta go to 23 minutes in and 8 seconds. And the reason why is because Scrooge turns his head around, and the Ghost of Christmas Present comes in this, like, giant flash of light. But all we see on Scrooge's face is that he is in shadow. and he looks horrified. And the colors that they use to show that he's in shadow are fantastic. I really don't know how else to describe this. You have to go to 23 minutes in and 8 seconds. I'm begging you nicely. That's all.
I just want to say, I think here's another recurring thing with adaptations is when adapters get to the Ghost of Christmas Present, I feel like they have a thought that, like, well, you know, this is a Christmas story, and it should have Santa Claus in it. But he can't be really Santa Claus, because this is a Christmas carol. So let's just give the Ghost of Christmas Present all of the attributes of Santa Claus.
Which is what they do here, except they also give him the attribute of talking to Scrooge by saying stuff like...
Touch me, Roe.
Which I think it's spot on. I think that's 100% something that the Ghost of Christmas Present would say. But it is also extremely funny.
The particular way that you notice that they're trying to do this, they're trying to make the Ghost of Christmas Present a stand-in for Santa, is that the Ghost of Christmas Present, I think, is supposed to be like a young man, and then over the course of the evening, he gradually gets older as Christmas comes to an end. In adaptations like this one, he's an old man with a white beard and everything from the very beginning. It's pretty clear that they, like, wanted to have Santa.
See, that's funny, because you would think with animation, it would be the easiest medium to, like, age the Ghost of Christmas Present over the course of his scene. They didn't do that. They spent the entire budget on Jacob Marley. They did give us the best Jacob Marley ever seen, but could have used a little bit of budgeting.
There's this thing where Scrooge is constantly rubbing the first sovereign he ever made. Okay, so sovereign is a British coin, just for clarification.
He's not rubbing, like, Queen Victoria.
No.
Like, and this isn't brought up, like, until this point.
But he's constantly rubbing this coin, and that seems like kind of a cool character motif for him to have. And it would be, if it weren't for the fact that we don't find out about it for the very first time in the middle of the Ghost of Christmas Present sequence.
No, instead they had to establish his other character trait, which is that he, like, is constantly trying to sneeze, but can't.
And that comes up again in the Ghost of Christmas Present sequence. The Ghost of Christmas Present tries to use his special dust to sprinkle on Scrooge to make him nicer.
See, didn't I bring that up, like, a couple episodes ago, where I was like, why doesn't the Ghost of Christmas Present just use the dust on him?
Well, we get an answer to that exact question in this version. We find out that Scrooge is just so mean that it doesn't have an impact on him, which is, I think, the answer that I tried to come up with.
They listen to you.
Yeah. And not only does the dust not make him nice, it can't even push him over the brink to the point where he can sneeze.
You're too mean to give away a good sneeze, Ebenezer Scrooge.
I don't know if sneezing is supposed to be a representation of evil. Or not being able to sneeze. I don't think that's, like, a thing.
I guess that kind of makes sense. I mean, the whole thing about, like, saying God bless you when someone sneezes. There's that urban legend that, like, the reason people say that is because it's believed that, like, there's a demon that resides in you when you're trying to sneeze. And it comes out when you finally do. And if that's, like, an intentional thing that the creators of this adaptation were going for by having Scrooge try to sneeze and unable to, that would be pretty clever. But I don't know if they thought of that.
Also, like, kind of a nudge in that direction would have been nice. But no, instead we just get Scrooge inexplicably trying to sneeze but failing. I will say, once again, my perennial problem with the Cratchits is that, like, they just don't really seem poor. If I finally find an adaptation that makes the Cratchits seem poor enough to my standards, I will celebrate.
They say several times that Cratchit has to care for a family of 9 on his salary of 15 shillings a week. We only ever see 6 members of his family, himself included.
I feel like that's pretty common. I feel like you only, like, you tend to only see a few kids.
In an animated version, that seems like it makes a little less sense.
You don't even have to hire extra kids. One thing I do like about the Cratchit family in this one, though, is that, like, Tiny Tim, this is gonna sound bad, but they actually, like, made Tiny Tim seem sick and weak.
Yeah, that's a common problem, is that they don't actually, like,
make... Like, okay, he's got a leg problem, but he seems to be kind of, like, bouncing around, and, like, he's lively and healthy. But in this one, he actually does, like, he talks and moves and acts as though he is a child with, like, tuberculosis or something.
Yeah, Tiny Tim is supposed to be chronically ill, and I think a lot of adaptations ignore that.
Also, the Ghost of Christmas Present and Scrooge at some point leave a scene just by, like, ascending upwards. Which, again, I think they ran out of animation budget, and they were like, well, how are we gonna get these characters out of this situation? We're just gonna move them up. One thing that I had not thought about until this adaptation, for whatever reason, is the, like, I see a crutch without an owner line. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that the Cratchits would, like, keep the crutch after Tiny Tim dies.
It's a souvenir.
If they do want to remember him by something, do they really want that one thing to be, like, the, like, aching reminder of, like, his physical condition?
Apparently.
Like, you'd think that, like, if you want to keep, like, a token of Tiny Tim around, maybe, like, a hat. Or, like, a favorite scarf. But no, instead, the thing that he depended on to get around because his legs didn't work properly. Plus, not to sound like a Scrooge, this is actually, as our previous episode would call it, a compassion. Wouldn't it make sense for the Cratchits to, like, sell or give away the crutch to, like, a new person who needs it?
That would make sense.
Considering that I bet the Cratchits probably got that crutch for, like, either pretty cheap or, like, maybe somebody gave it to them out of the kindness of their hearts, just saying, Bob Cratchit.
The used crutch market in Victorian London was robust.
One more thing that I thought about with the I see a crutch without an owner line is that, like, I obviously understand the line means that Tiny Tim is dead. However... A nicer way to interpret this is that Tiny Tim no longer needs the crutch.
I almost think that, like, I mean, this is the Ghost of Christmas Present who's saying this. He's the Ghost of Christmas Present. Presumably he doesn't know very much about what's going to happen in the future because that's not his job. So it's entirely possible that the Ghost of Christmas Present was just saying, I see a crutch without an owner, because he figures, like, well, hey, one way or the other, I'm going to be right. Either he gets better or he dies.
Ignoring, of course, the possibility that Tiny Tim would become slightly less Tiny Tim and grow up and keep using the crutch. There's really not that much to say about the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come scene. If you were still holding on to some hope that, like, hey, if they animated Jacob Marley super cool, maybe they'll make the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come look super cool too. No, it's just a guy in a hood.
We were holding on to that hope.
I was holding on to that hope. Deeply.
There's a joke that someone tells about, like...
Well, when did he die?
Last night, I believe.
Why? What was the matter with him?
Maybe he tried to eat some of his money.
Now, why should he do that?
Get closer to it.
This joke does not make sense. Maybe it was lost in translation, but it just isn't funny.
Yeah, this is not a rollicking Christmas carol. There are very few jokes in it, and yeah, like the ones that they tell don't land.
And this also goes back to the thing about, like, Scrooge being the laughingstock of the neighborhood.
One thing I do find extremely funny in this adaptation, however, this is like a rollicking moment for me personally, is when he goes up to what is clearly his corpse under the sheet, and you can tell it's him because of the crimson chin.
The very distinctively shaped jaw, which makes it impossible to not notice that Scrooge is the one underneath that sheet.
Like, they made the effort of drawing the chin in under the cloth, and he's still like, who could this be?
Also, something that occurred to me watching this adaptation that I think applies not to all adaptations, but to some of them, and certainly to the original book, is when, in this scene where the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come brings Scrooge to his bedroom in the future to show him his dead body, and, like, it's under the sheet and he doesn't know that it's his body, I have to wonder, was the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come expecting that Scrooge would tear the sheet off and see his own face, and that would be the moment where he decides he needs to change? And then when Scrooge freaks out...
Oh crap, I gotta think of something else now. How about let's see how the Cratchits are doing? That seems like a good idea. Not only does Scrooge not recognize his own chin, but even at the dramatic scene where he sees his name on the tombstone, this man still has the audacity to ask, am I the man buried here? After it has already been made clear to both Scrooge and the audience that yes, he is the man buried there.
And then he says, I will sponge the writing from this stone. No, you won't. You're gonna die no matter what.
If you're a bad person, you'll die.
This is a really common problem. And I think you can almost kind of give Charles Dickens a little bit of shit for it because he didn't really explain it all that well to the reader.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it for more than like a few seconds, you realize, oh, the horror of that scene is that no one's at his funeral. But a lot of times when he visits his tombstone, it's not clear that he's visiting it. Like, Christmas Yet to Come does not specify a year. So for all the audience knows, we could be watching Scrooge seeing his tombstone like 10 years from now. In which case, yeah, it would make sense that no one's there.
Yeah, the whole point is that it's supposed to be during his funeral, but no one's there because no one cares about him.
The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, like, while Scrooge is giving his monologue, we keep cutting back to him, which isn't, like, a usual thing. Like, normally Scrooge is the focus of that scene, but we keep cutting back to the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and he just kind of, like, has his arms crossed. Like, I'm waiting. You done yet?
Scrooge wakes up, and it's Christmas morning, and he finds the boy who tells him it's Christmas Day, and he asks him to bring the turkey, and in order to pay for the turkey, Scrooge throws down his special very first sovereign that he's been rubbing for supposedly the entire show up to this point.
You know, sovereign that was mentioned once.
We only saw it once. And in case you thought that, like, the creators of this adaptation might have thought it was a good idea to, like, remind the viewer of this, no. If you weren't paying attention during that specific moment where it's brought up, you would just think that it's a completely normal coin that he's throwing down to the boy.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just like a brown, simple-looking coin. Like, there's nothing about it that signifies, like, ah, yes, this is an important thing to Scrooge.
They didn't even animate it in a way that makes it look like it's been worn from years of being rubbed between his finger and his thumb.
It was around this point where I realized that there hadn't been a second musical number. It was just that one, like, half an hour ago.
Yeah. And in case you thought maybe they were going to throw one in there at the end, they did not.
Once again, they have the pretty usual change where, like, Scrooge goes to the Cratchit house for Christmas instead. I guess they expect that people kind of forget who Fred was. Especially because a lot of adaptations cut out the very boring scene where, like, Fred and his rich friends are playing, like, Blind Man's Bluff or whatever. So without that, like, you only see Fred that one time. And a lot of adaptations, it's like, if you aren't paying attention to the fact that he's calling him uncle, you might not even know that they're related. So
you might think that this is just some random guy who showed up at Scrooge's... Wait, why is Scrooge's nephew even there? In the first place.
Because he wants to invite him to Christmas.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't know why Scrooge even let him in the door in the first place.
That's a good question. I don't know, because considering that Scrooge's main character trait is that he wants to be left alone, I don't know why his door is just, like, unlocked.
Yeah, a lot of people coming in and out.
So overall, this adaptation, it's played pretty straight, except for that one moment with Bob Cratchit and Fred. The dialogue is, I mean, like, the dialogue is right from the book, but overall, I would say that they, like, picked pretty good selections from the book. Like, the dialogue is, for the most part, pretty good. Everything else is pretty cheap. In our final moment, we are treated to Scrooge finally sneezing, in case anyone was worried about where that subplot was going. So yes, he finally sneezes as a representation of the devil leaving his body, if we're going with that. Really, the only remarkable thing I have to say about this adaptation is that it gave me my new favorite Jacob Marley. If I had to do, like, a pyramid like they do in, like, Dance Moms, he's at the top of the pyramid right now. We'll see if he gets pushed out, but I have a new favorite Jacob Marley, everybody.
I think that's just about everything we have to say. I've been Ben Schultz.
I've been Nora Schultz.
And you have been listening to Trying to Adapt.
Thank you.
A Merry Christmas to you now.